Good day, nerds, and thanks for joining us for episode 11 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host and joined with Steve, the founder of the Nerd Cantina.
What's up, nerds?
We're going to hit the weekly news starting on for May 29th. What we're looking to talk about today is a little bit of Brightburn review. We've also got a discussion around the Vanity Fair article with Star Wars. We're going to discuss some new news regarding Xbox and PlayStation teaming up. And then a discussion around the 5G war and the Huawei ban in some technology space.
Got a good show for you today, nerds. Hope you enjoy it.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
All right, well, good day, nerds. I was kind of in a dead zone for the last 5 days, so I was a bit disconnected from the tech news as I was off the grid living out in the middle of the desert. In the Anza Borrego Desert here in California, camping with the family. So I received zero updates in my life. No cell phone reception other than a random text message that would come through and some weird roaming signal that got picked up. So for the most part, I really got to disconnect, which was good, and also left me feeling a bit unprepared for today's episode. So Steve, you might have to carry some of this talk.
Yeah, we don't go anywhere and we don't do anything. So I got all the notifications.
to get started with some news, I know you went and saw a movie you were excited to see how it was played out in that Brightburn.
Yeah,
movie.
Three decent movies released this week, Brightburn, Aladdin, and Booksmart. I only got to go see one so far. I'm going to try to go see the other two sometime this week, but I also have to fit in Godzilla, which comes out Thursday night. So I have a big plate of movies to go see this week. But Brightburn was the first one I wanted to review just because it fell into that superhero genre, kind of with it being a horror play on Superman. I gave it 3 out of 5 stars. It wasn't a bad movie. It felt a little rushed. So they rushed through the origin, they rushed through character development just to get to the meat of the movie, which ends up being more horror than anything. Like, if you go in thinking it's going to be a just kind of like gory superhero movie, no, it's a gory horror movie with a superhero aspect. So it really falls more in the horror genre. The gore was extreme. They tried to build some suspense and some thrills. They do an okay job of it at times. I really think the downfall of this movie is basically timing. I'm very curious as to why they didn't release this during the Halloween season. My suggestion would be for those that are interested in the movie to just pick it up on Blu-ray or, you know, download it digitally or something around that holiday season. When when everybody's in that scary movie mode, I think it'll go over a lot better when you have that kind of like mindset, and you're in that kind of season. But for me, it was a little underwhelming. The actors didn't do a bad job. They didn't go above and beyond anything. I really don't have anything bad to say about the movie, but I really don't have much good to say about it at the same time. It was just a movie.
Now, if you're a horror fan, like, you know, you talk about Halloween season, but there's some people who are horror movies are always in season. That's just their jam. Is it a good horror movie kind of on that level, or is it just a mediocre movie regardless of genre?
See, I'm not a big horror fan. I mean, you know, our father never let us watch horror films growing up, so I didn't really get into them as a kid. I would have to say it was decent. I mean, I would defer to a horror fan to know where it ranks amongst the genre. But like I said, it felt rushed in the beginning. At no point do you get like attached to any of the characters. So you don't care when someone dies. You don't care, you know, like when big moments happen. It was just kind of like, you know, they had this cool premise. What if Superman turned into a bad guy? It's basically what if that little shit next door got superpowers, you know, like that neighbor's kid that you hate that is just loud as shit and always, you know, terrorizes the neighborhood. Like, imagine if he had superpowers. That's pretty much the premise. You know, in that aspect, it was kind of cool. But, yeah, it was meh. You know, it wasn't that bad, but it wasn't that good either. If you're a horror fan, I would be interested to know your opinion. You know, so if you really love the gore and the suspense thrillers, go see the movie and let me know what you think and educate me a little bit. You know, we have the voicemail line in the comments in our Facebook group. So anybody else that's seen this movie that would consider them a fan of the horror genre, I would be really interested to know what you felt, because maybe it's just, yeah, it's not my cup of tea. So I never claim to be a movie expert. I like what I like, and I know what I know. And this is the one that I might be wrong on. So give me a heads up.
Yeah, which is disappointing to hear that it you didn't receive it very well. You know, looking at the trailers, you could definitely say it was intended to be a high suspense horror movie. Which is unfortunate, because I'm also not a big fan of horror movies. They give me nightmares, and it's a story that I want told, though, because you know, just like we were excited to see The Boys getting picked up by Amazon, because we're fan of the comics, big fans of the Steelheart series of books written by Brandon Sanderson, kind of that anti-hero. What would it really look like if randos got superpowers? Because the fact that they're going to be altruistic human beings trying to save the world is probably a low likelihood, and more than likely they're going to try to dominate society. And I liked that idea of this coming of age, young superpowers. What would a young child with superpowers really
do? Yeah, I don't want to give away spoilers, but they don't. The kid doesn't do everything he does just because he's an asshole. Like, there's a secondary motivation behind it that kind of gives the little kid a cop out, like, oh, well, it's not his fault. You know, like, I think it would have been better if, like, nah, he's just a little shit kid, you know, that...
No, he's just stronger than everybody else. He realizes that he could own everybody.
He's just that asshole kid that realizes I'm bigger than my dad now, so...
Yeah, so it's unfortunate that it was just kind of too hoary, and like you said, my problem with the horror genre is a lot of times it's not about storytelling, it's not about characters, the story is secondary, it's all about those moments of suspense, and it's all about building up to certain scenes and certain suspenseful moments, and I think
they rushed to it because they knew everybody knows that origin story. Everybody knows how Superman got powers, how Superman came to Earth, how the family found him. So I think they felt like they could rush through all that. What ends up happening when they rush through it is you don't build that, like, Ma Kent relationship as a reader or someone watching the film. You don't build that relationship to the parents as much. You know, you don't, like, I just felt really disconnected from the movie, I guess you could say. And in my head, it was basically just because they were just like, all right, let's get to the meat of the pit, you know, let's get to the meat. And they kind of really sped up to that point.
Yeah, well, again, it could be a missed opportunity. Again, if you're a horror genre person and you love the movie, because that is your favorite, visit us at thenerdcantina.com/show11 and leave a comment in the show notes or call the voicemail line. Just let us know where we're missing out at, because again, there may be some convincing on why we should give a little more respect to this genre of movies that for the most part we've ignored our entire life. But moving on to some more movie news, we've got the Vanity Fair article came out about a week ago at this point in time for Star Wars, and Vanity Fair had their choose your side covers where you could have either the Kylo cover, the Ren cover, and they're beautifully designed pictures there. But there's some not necessarily spoilers, but some
they gave a few more details. They released a picture of the new female character in costume. I'm forgetting her name offhand yet, but you know, the costume designs look good. All the photos from the sets are, you know, kind of intriguing, getting the engine fired up again for the Star Wars mania.
Yeah, you know, the big one coming out of there is they confirm that the Knights of Ren are in existence in the movie. They confirm that the Knights of Ren are there, but they make their their statement in there that Kylo Ren is mowing down the Knights of Ren in the trailer that we've previously discussed and gone through. That being kind of big news to be confirmed through Vanity Fair. Now, later, Vanity Fair comes out and retracts that statement and says that was inaccurate. The statement that he was mowing down the Knights of Ren was inaccurate.
Yeah, I'm thinking Mickey Mouse went to headquarters and bitch slapped somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. We can all now go ahead and speculate on whether that was just Star Wars Studios, Disney coming out and telling Vanity Fair, like, hey, you are not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to give that up.
Well, it gives away Kylo's motivations, because now it leads to me to believe that we're doing another redemption story like they did with Vader, you know? So Kylo's the bad guy. Him and Rey are bonded. He realizes the error of his ways, you know, but the Knights of Ren will, you know, are still evil. So Kylo's fighting the Knights of Ren. So it gives you this, like, implication that we're doing yet another redemption story for Star Wars. And yeah, I don't know.
It's too hard to tell any of that. You know, it could be Kylo having his redemption and now fighting his own people. It could be his own people turning against him. It could be just Kylo going fully off the rails and just killing everybody. It could go any different direction. It doesn't really give us too much, even if you ignore the fact that he retracted the statement and said that it was inaccurate. It still doesn't tell you too much about the direction of the movie. It doesn't.
It could be nothing. It could be the fact that just Disney doesn't want assholes like us speculating for the next 8 months, you know, whatever, 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, I think they love assholes like us speculating, which is why even in the trailer they have the clip of Kylo, you know, punching down and stabbing through people that looked like the Knights of Ren that started the speculation in the first place that Vanity Fair then confirmed and made a big point of confirming it. People were already speculating that this was a part of the movie and part of the direction it was going. And again, it was because of the trailer that I'm sure they spent no shortage of time figuring out exactly which images they wanted everybody to see and speculate on. So it's all a part of them just building up the hype all the way up to Christmas season.
They're trying to have that control too. They want the speculation, but they want to control the direction that the speculation goes in. You can tell that, you know, yeah, they want the buzz for sure, but they don't want anybody to guess it right. You know, like I remember when fucking Lost was on the air and everybody guessed that Lost was purgatory, and then the directors were just like, oh shit, they figured it out. No, guys, no, that's not it. And then they spent three horrible seasons writing around the fact that it still ended, that it was purgatory, and like the fans were right from all along, and you could just tell it ruined like the writing of the show. It ruined everything about the suspense of that show because fans guessed it, and you really felt that in the production that the producers kind of lost the sail in their wins once everyone was like, oh, it's purgatory, and they're just like, oh. No, it's it's something else, but it's not purgatory. You know, so I think ever since then, a lot of the producers are trying to avoid that. You know, they want the buzz, they want the speculation, but they want to be able to steer it away from the actual film so that there's still some suspense and you know, enjoyment when you go to see it.
And then another piece of the storyline that it could make, you know, some more sense, as we talked before about, you know, how are we all supposed to believe that Rey is now this super powerful master of the Force Jedi going forward. And the Vanity Fair article confirms that it's about a year and a half after The Last Jedi as far as timeline goes. So we've got to assume, you know, maybe they're going to give us a solid like Rocky montage of Rey beating the meats in some ice planet, and you know, just sitting there studying the tomes of the Jedi that she now has access
running,
to.
Running with a wooden wagon through the snow in Russia.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I'm hoping that the movie brings that to us. If not, then I'm hoping YouTube brings that.
I mean, it's plausible. She grabbed the books at the end of the shitstorm that was The Last Jedi, and you know, you can say that she's just a great study and just, you know, whatever. When it comes to these things, movies nowadays, they just throw out all plausibility. They don't care. They're just like, believe it. We put it in the movie. Just eat it. Eat your porridge, you assholes. Just take it and fucking eat it.
You guys have already bought off to the fact that this super advanced society lived long, long ago. Just shut up and absorb the fact that in a year and a half, she could become a master Jedi.
Why? Because I said so, assholes.
there is some certain, I believe, that you have to take on. But if they do a good job coming out facetiously talking about the Rocky montage, but if they do a good job at the beginning of the movie setting the stage of what took place in the year and a half to prep Rey to be able to actually wield the Force, I feel that you could make it palatable. I think it could play out
and
well.
Everybody wants her to be as much of a Jedi as she can, so it plays into kind of what audiences are going to go in expecting. You know, she's the heroine of the trilogy, so if she's some kind of half-assed Jedi chump, it's not going to play too well. I don't think.
Coming out of some movie news there, and into some video game news, which you brought to my attention again. This happened in the last couple of days in my dead zone of internet connectivity. So we've got the Xbox and PlayStation team up. If you want to enlighten me.
So a little bit of backstory. Google announced that they're going into gaming with this Stadia, and what they are specializing in is cloud gaming. So the days of consoles are going to be gone. No more consoles. You're either just going to play directly on your TV or play directly on your computer. The reason why Google is going after it is because you need this large server infrastructure to be able to do cloud gaming. So you need big-ass server farms all over the country so people aren't dialing from New York to California to play these things. You need localized server farms, high-speed internet, and to get the best quality for this cloud gaming. So with Google already having that server base, they wanted to move into cloud gaming. Same thing with Amazon. Amazon has the largest server network in the world. So Amazon's now talking about starting cloud gaming system too. Well, when Microsoft got word of this, Microsoft has one of the largest server farms due to their corporate capacity. You know, they've always been, you know, it's not just video games Microsoft does, you know, so they've had the infrastructure set up too. But they realized that as a company that it would be hard to compete with a Google or an Amazon. They went to PlayStation and was like, look, man, these companies are gonna kill us with cloud gaming. Sony doesn't have any of that infrastructure set up. You know, they rely to get all their money based on content. They kind of looked at Xbox and were like, no, yeah, you're right. You know, like the mindset is Sony and Xbox have been going head to head for over a decade. And while they're busy fighting with each other, Google and Amazon will fucking eat their lunch. And there's nothing they can do about it. So they both came to terms and said, all right, you know, let's team up. We'll host Sony's cloud gaming. And they're working out that kind of like structured deal so that, you know, they can stay viable in the game. Because they have the name recognition, right? So when you're talking about video games, they're always going to be the top two names. Even when Stadia comes out or whatever Amazon system comes out, Xbox and PlayStation will always have the name recognition. So as long as they can keep neck and neck with performance and content, they should do all right.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. The next generation of games is going to be difficult for the consoles to continue to compete.
They're saying the next Xbox and the next PlayStation 5 might be the last consoles ever made. That's what they're thinking.
Yeah, I could see that being the case. You know, you may not need one that we all know that even the Xbox and PlayStation, you know, it's definitely going to be their last iteration of having discs and shipping discs. And they've already kind of committed to that downloadable game format as its way forward. So it makes sense. It's still surprising to see Sony teaming up with Xbox instead of Google or Amazon.
Well, even Nintendo, even Xbox has got a working relationship with Nintendo, and they're talking about bringing Nintendo on. So you're going to have all the companies that we're used to, like, teaming up to fight off Google and Amazon, which I'm glad they are. You know, I don't want fucking Google and Amazon owning everything in my goddamn life.
Yeah.
You know, so the fact that Microsoft is kind of stepping up and saying, look, you know, it's been a fun rivalry with Nintendo and PlayStation. We're all making money. It's been a fun rivalry. You know, let's keep that going. They don't want to see the two biggest names of their competition, but also the two biggest names in innovation and development for video games over the last 30 years. You know, it'd be a shame for Nintendo to actually finally go bankruptcy because Google just ate them alive, or have Google buy up all that content, you know, and have the exclusive rights to Mario and them. Like,
yeah, but that's where I guess I anticipated it going was Google controlling one of the consoles or teaming up with one of the consoles as far as licensing, or even like Steam, which has always kind of existed in the cloud gaming space, the internet gaming space.
Yeah, and Steam's upping they're like, everybody's making a run. Like, this is a quick dash now to the finish line for cloud gaming. You know, Steam is upping their capacity, I want to say, and I think there was one more company that is going to be going for it that the article said. But right now, Amazon, Google, and Team MicroStation is going to really be the forerunners with this if they can all figure it out. You know, the main thing is that you needed those server farms, and there's, you know, Sony isn't going to invest a couple billion to build server farms all over the United States.
Yeah.
You know, especially when companies already have it established. So Sony's only option to stay viable was to sign a deal with somebody. And I'm glad they did it with Microsoft. You know, I would have hated to see them go with an Amazon or a Google that just own our lives.
Yeah. I mean, it, like I said, it makes sense. I think more news will come as we start to hear how they'll implement that, when they'll implement these things, that there's still a lot to be told. Does this truly combine them? Is it just Microsoft kind of, you know, leasing out server space to Sony, or is this a true, hey, cloud gaming cross-platform world that takes place in the next generation?
Yeah, they've probably already been negotiating that. the cross-platform. Sony and Microsoft are already kind of working it out. Nintendo uses Xbox Live for a few of their online capabilities for their games. Nintendo does already. So Nintendo and Microsoft already had a working relationship. Sony and Microsoft were already trying to find a working relationship. And then Google announced the Stadia, and they just both dropped their weapons and were like, all right, let's hug it out. Like, we don't want to die, so let's hug it out.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like I said, I'm curious to see how it's going to get implemented, if it's really going to have much of a change, or if it's just going to be a Microsoft leasing of space, and see if it does kind of bring really the initial change to the consoles, and then the essentially end to the need to have consoles, because once everything becomes cloud gaming, really all you need is just a computer with the processing ability to play the games. And who knows, as things get faster and faster, you know, our smart TVs may have the processing capability to just...
That's the ultimate goal, is that, you know, you have Ethernet jacks in your TVs. I'm assuming that once it really hits, they're going to have to redo some of these hardware specs in the TVs if you want to play directly from your TV. Yeah, it's really just going to be a decent internet connection and a basic processing unit to run these things.
I don't know. How far out do you think we are from that level?
Cloud gaming,
nerds Stradamus, this, you think in 5 years?
I'm just thinking three to five. Yeah, 3 to 5. Yeah. I'd say, you know, I think Stadia, I think Google has the capacity to really rush this and put the pressure on them. So I think Stadia releases shortly after PS5 and the new Xbox release, and it's going to be like, hey, play video games without buying a $500 console.
Yeah, but how do so Stadia, again, enlighten me. How do you play the Stadia games currently? Like, what is the plan?
There is no current Stadia. Yeah. This is all in the works.
In current news, how does it? What's the plan to roll it out?
It's basically going to be like a Steam system. You know,
but
you
Steam
log in.
System didn't get picked up by anybody. Like, no, nobody was playing the Steam engine, Steam controllers, right?
Yeah. And I think a lot of Steam. I think it's because so many people are used to playing on their TV and playing on consoles, but now that the new generation are used to playing on tablets and phones. I think that crossover is going to be a lot easier for the new generation. It's dinosaurs like us that don't want to fucking play on a laptop or PC. You know, our sister watches most of her TV and is a straight YouTuber and watches everything on her laptop. Like, I don't even think she owns a TV. You know, so like everything's changing and we're the old, you know, fuddy-duddies that just don't get it. So I think, it's going to be the new generation that really pioneers this through, and we're going to be dragged along kicking and screaming.
Well, we'll see on that. It will change. We all know it's going to change here in the near future. I don't know whether in 5 years we're going to be fully console-less, but it will take place. All right, well, Steve, to transition to our last topic for the day, and something that I kind of nerded it out over the last couple weeks as it's been more and more prominent in the news, which is the Huawei ban of the U.S. ban of all Huawei products and not just the products being here, but also the executive order being written that banned any U.S. companies from dealing with Huawei, which resulted in Google pulling any future updates or Android support and Google Play services support to Huawei phones, which Huawei was really leading innovation in the cell phone industry.
They
were the number two cell phone company. They were probably going to become the number one worldwide, not number one in US, but number one worldwide cell phone maker. Now, you know, they no longer have an operating system. Yes, Android in it itself is an open source software, so they can continue to run Android. But they're not going to get
Android
updates.
Google Store. They're not going to get the Google Play. Like, yeah.
And it, you know, it makes a big change in tech news. And it all really kind of centers around the 5G race, the 5G war between U.S., Canada kind of driving technology and Huawei, Chinese-owned company, being the leading edge of development of 5G.
Well, and it's not totally necessarily that either. There's a lot of a little bit of politics that goes into this too, because it's not just about innovation and technology, right? You know, it's not the Americans just afraid of a Chinese company dominating the phone industry. It's the it's us as a country being very skeptical of a Chinese company who is beholden to a Chinese government being the leading producer of phones around the world and having backdoor access to. So we already know our phones spy on us. We already, you know, Snowden leaked the fact that the government has been spying on our phones. You know, the United States has been spying on its own citizens for how long with the phones? So we know it's 100% possible and likely. So with that being said, it's one thing for our own government to be spying on us. It's another thing for a foreign government to be doing that.
Yeah, but the hardware in itself of the cell phones and modems and things was easy for the U.S. government to remove, because what they essentially did, they effectively, there's a reason why Huawei, you know, internationally is a huge phone company. Modems, they exist everywhere else, but you don't see them here, right? You don't see Huawei phones except for the random dudes who go and buy it, you know, on some European website or whatever else.
The technology hipster that wants to be on the top of the trends.
And there's a reason for that. And it's because the U.S. government pulled any government contracts from anybody who was using Huawei services. So as far as hardware went, you know, if you were a major manufacturing company, you're not putting anything that you got from Huawei into your modems into your phones, into anything else, because you couldn't get a government contract then, which left a lot of money off the table. So they effectively, through economic means, have made it to where Huawei just couldn't pick up steam anywhere in this country. The 5G race is really what's now driving this massive move in the executive order, yes, using security concerns. So Huawei being deemed by the government as a significant security risk, not because we've found anything in the phones. Those phones have been dissected. The code has been dissected. And there's never been any evidence proven that there are those
backdoor channels.
But it's
one software patch.
But it's a firmware patch. Yeah, it's a firmware update. It could be anything. And then again, the access to 5G, if you allow Huawei to win the 5G race, and they're the ones that roll out the 5G technology, 5G is going to be a game changer. And that's one of the directions I want to take this conversation is, I knew 5G was going to be big. And 5G is this big talk. I never really dove deep into what 5G provided until recently.
Just the downloading times, they say, is like what takes you 3 minutes to download now is going to take you 20 seconds. Like it's staggering the speed increase that 5G is going to have.
Yeah, so it's the speed increase of, so 5G technology, you know, what the current cell phones makers are talking about when they're saying, oh, they're going to start rolling out 5G. Really, they're talking about at this point in time, just kind of an increase, but not to the total capacity of what millimeter wave 5G technology can bring, which could be up to 20 gigabits per second total speed once it gets fully maximized at those spectrum levels,
which is insane. That's like, my hard line downloads, you know, right now at I think I got the 150 megabyte. You know, you could buy 1 gig from Comcast for the extra. You know, so you're talking 1 gigabyte per second.
Yeah. We're talking about getting greater than 100 times faster. Across mobile devices. We're talking about the no longer need for, you know, everybody begging for fiber to their homes forever. You no longer need that because you're going to have that over the air capability through 5G means. Granted, the wavelength, the wave propagated length of how far these things can go is extremely small. You're talking about an individual tower at those speeds only being able to go about 300 meters. So you're talking about a city, you're talking about a block that they're going to have constant repeaters, constant towers that are able to do this. So it's a huge infrastructure change that really are only going to be rolled out to the greatest of urban areas at first. That change is significant. And then that's just the download speeds. And then what's truly staggering is the latency speeds. So the latency being down to 1 millisecond. Right now, you know, an average cell phone and stuff like that is far over 100 milliseconds. So that latency goes down to instantaneous, like undetectable change from real time to the human eye. So that means gaming becomes on your mobile device as easy as anything else, but not just gaming. When you talk about
The days of buffering, the days of buffering are gone. You know, that little pinwheel. Anytime you're trying to watch a YouTube video, it's gone.
Yeah, those speeds would be able to allow you to instantly stream 4K videos, probably 100 of them in a single device, based off of like just pure speed. But the latency is the what will drive the future of a lot of technology, because once the latency gets to the point that it is near instantaneous, that is, it is as fast as real life, you get to a point where autonomous cars, which are interconnected, know exactly in real time where every other car is. You get to a point where...
Yeah, it has huge AI implications, especially with self-driving cars dawning, you know, so like you can see that they're going hand in hand with the autonomous cars, you know, because if we're going to have a whole highway full of driverless Ubers and things like that, you're going to need a 5G type infrastructure to be able to communicate through and things like that.
Again, just remote access. Some of the concerns with the AI automatic, you know, cars and automatic trucking is, you know, the automatic trucks work great when it's just going down highway, but people are worried about it in the urban centers. Well, what if a human then remotely controlled the truck once it got into the urban centers to get it to a final destination, and they can control it with perfect latency, with zero delay, and take it to its final destination without ever some physical person getting into the vehicle. You've got access to world-class doctors that a lot of surgeries are already performed, you know, through robotic hands with a doctor on site. Well, now you got a doctor who's living in his summer home up in the mountains with 5G access that has just as fast response time through latency as he had in real life being there physically.
Well, and a lot of it has to do with AI also. You know, you're talking about human latency, you know, between a controller and a robot. There's going to be a day where the human gets phased out of that completely, and we're going to need a latency system that is capable of keeping up with the thought process of an AI, you know, driving that the rest of that way, you know, because eventually it's like, yeah, we're at that point now, you know, where cars are driving themselves, trucks are driving themselves, but they're limited in their capability. But we're already there now. This isn't something that's happening in the future. This is real life going on right now. So if we are going to hit in the next 10 years a point where there is no human contact involved, this system needs to be in place just to keep up with the terabytes worth of calculations a second that AI is doing, that it needs to be able to relay to these systems and to these trucks or surgical robots or whatever it is. You know, the AI is going to be in a server farm somewhere, and it's going to need to be able to talk to a truck 3,000 miles away. Yeah, a 5G system is gonna be required for that communication alone.
Yeah, and it's hard to even fathom how interconnected then everything can be. Once you increase the speeds wirelessly to this level, and you give the technology, which is not going to happen in any short order of time, right? It's going to take decades before it's fully maximized. But this is the leading edge of the interconnected technology across all spectrums, where everything is communicating in real time with each other. Cars are telling each other exactly where they are in real time. Every single car in a city can handle knowing exactly where every single car in the city is at a single point in time, which means they can control flows of traffic perfectly without any accidents. With like, there's extreme, huge, you know, infrastructure capabilities that need to be done.
The dawn of quantum computing coming real soon, and all kinds of you can't have the lines of communication between operating systems, you know, between AIs. You can't have that bottlenecked at any point, you know. And if our current system of communication through our current internet means and things like that aren't fast enough for these massive AI, you know, systems to be able to communicate to each other without any kind of delay, then essentially, you know, the current infrastructure is bottlenecking technology. And I think really that's one of the major drivers, to tell you the truth, is companies see a day where they don't need employees. And they're not going to let some shitty internet connection be the thing that stops that.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be some companies that can be autonomous. It's, like I said, it is a leading edge. 5G is a leading edge towards a lot of change and innovation in technology. The wireless real-time connectivity is important towards a lot of the directions that things are going to go. So it goes back to that 5G war. Why is it so important that the U.S. doesn't allow China to be the ones to develop this technology that then worldwide gets adopted?
Because we can't have a communist country that has their own interests controlling that. I mean, like, yeah, we're going to get a little political here now. We try to avoid that on the Cantina shows. But let's be honest here. China don't give a shit about your copyrights. China don't give a shit about your trademarks. China don't give a shit about anything that you're trying to do. China cares about China. You don't want them having their hands around everything in the world. I mean, granted, you don't want any one country. You know, I'm not going to say America is the model for leading the way in this, you know, but at the same point, we do have a little bit of good faith built up, you know. So my understanding is when it comes to this 5G and everything in Huawei, why are we honoring patents for these cameras in Huawei phones when China don't honor our patents. Just take the fucking camera and bootleg it and put it in iPhones and put it in fucking, you know, the Nexus or whatever. Like, China files patents in the United States and we abide by those patents. But we file patents all over the goddamn world and China says, fuck your patent. We're taking it anyways.
Again, it's Chinese companies filing patents. We have to respect
companies. But that's the thing is, we don't have to respect Chinese companies because those Chinese companies, the minute their government walks in the building and says, hey, motherfuckers, you have to do this or we're going to shut your company down, they have to do it. So they operate as private companies, but it's really a disguise. You know, so they are semi-autonomous and semi-independent of the Chinese government, to where the Chinese government doesn't have their hands in everything they do. They let them be, you know, be part of the free market and things like that. But at the same time, the government is always watching. They're the helicopter parent of every one of these Chinese companies. And the minute the Chinese company walks towards an edge they don't want their kid walking toward, they're going to pull them back. Anytime they want their kid to wear an outfit that they want, you know, want them to wear, they're going to say, no, you're going to fucking wear this and you're going to fucking like it. And so we can't treat Chinese companies as we treat American companies, French companies, Canadian companies. You know, like they are not. They disguise themselves as that. But at any point, the Chinese government can say, you guys are doing great. We're going to need you to put this line of code in too, though. And if you don't, we'll just fucking execute you and put you into fucking gulags.
Yeah, so this is why I find this fascinating, because, you know, while there's a lot of people who want to say that there's no evidence of Chinese tampering, there's no evidence of Chinese spy, we're taking one of the most innovative companies in the world right now, and we are shutting them down, which has caused China to come out and say that they are looking at banning Apple within their country, which means all Apple manufacturing and all Apple products getting banned from China, which will have huge ripple effects towards our U.S. economy. All these things being, you know, potential big problems and implications. I think it's probably what needs to happen. I'm gonna take the faith on the security experts and the U.S. government. This is something is absolutely what we should be concerned about.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to this, I think not just the United States, but the globe needs to kind of unite.
We'll see where this goes as far as the impact, if they really are going to do, you know, any bans on U.S. companies and retaliate in this technology space or digital space. But right now, I think the ban on Huawei, I don't want the Chinese technology to own essentially the bandwidth space that all data is getting shared across. I don't want
the international doctors. Then they own all data.
Exactly. I don't want the infrastructure. As our infrastructure becomes more and more tied through the digital space and through the 5G technology, you know, when our power plants and our infrastructure is communicating through 5G technology on, you know, power regulation and safety concerns, and our infrastructure is relying on it, I don't want that going through Chinese technology. I don't want that going through any technology that we don't have 100% control of here in the U.S. And so it does become, take the lumps. Glad the executive order was signed and we're taking drastic measures to get us caught up to where I think it's believed that Huawei is, as they're on that forefront and they're closer to having developed 5G technology.
And American companies need to be okay with not having the Chinese money. You know, like, and if you're an American company that is like, well, no, we don't agree with this, da 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 da, then, you know, fuck you. Like, it's borderline treasonous to say, well, no, we want to put profits above American security. We want to put profits above, you know, not just even American security. It's the world. It's really China looks at it as China versus the world. And they're trying to assert dominance. And this is their way of doing it. I mean, you could see it in everything they do. They're building little concrete islands in the narrow ways between Asia and China, just so they can say that international waters aren't international waters anymore. They're Chinese waters. And if you want to pass through this waterway, you got to pay China a toll or you have to live by our things. They're literally just building concrete islands in the middle of these waterways so they can expand Chinese water space. Like, they give no fucks about the way the rest of the world works. It's China or nothing. And if that's the attitude China wants to have, the rest of the world needs to say, well, then fuck you. Get out of our sandbox. Like, you go ahead and go play over the corner and do whatever you want to do. You could sell Chinese products to Chinese people. But no, we as consumers, as American, as companies, as just global citizens that don't want to live under a Chinese dictatorship need to be able to say, fuck the Chinese profits. Fuck, you know, anything that they're doing, we can survive on selling to Britain and to, you know, to Canada, to Japan, to all these, to these other countries that respect trade negotiations, that respect patents, that that understand that how commerce works, global commerce works, and we can thrive that way. Yeah, we're gonna lose a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to the future of me sitting in my autonomous car, playing a video game on my zero latency cell phone or mobile device, and that being ran through U.S. companies. It's just the direction that it needs to go.
And to get there, I say we do the same thing China's done. Just fucking steal it from them. They've stolen how much from American companies and from other innovators. They literally just steal it. The corporate espionage is Chinese number one import.
Yeah.
Like, so why don't we just take a Huawei phone and say, fuck your camera. Guess what we just took? And let them deal with it and let them, you know, realize that, okay, this is how either China's going to wake up one day and say, okay, we're fine with it, us being against the world, or they're going to wake up and say, no, we want to play in the sandbox too. All right. Well
they're already fine with them being against the world. It's just a matter of they're smart, right? And they are.
This is essentially a new concept
and exploiting the laws around other countries, right? Right now, the U.S. government is being sued by China as of, you know, yesterday, being sued by China to remove this ban. They're using our legal systems and everything else against us, just like they use our patent laws against us. They use our systems against us, and they have no problem. They recognize it, and
that's my point. Is we give them the good faith, we let them play within our systems, and it's a one-sided game.
Yeah,
and at what point as a nation, or as a world, do we say, "Nah, man, fuck these dudes," like nah, fuck them. Like you want to skirt all our laws and do this, but then you want to sue us and use our laws against us. Like we can't use our laws against you, but you could use our laws against us. Now that ain't how that works, motherfuckers.
Time will tell exactly where 5G technology goes and who's going to be the developer of the technology that's going to get adapted worldwide. You know, we all hope it's going to be the US, which is really led by Ericsson as the only real company that's developing that in the US or driving that technology. You know, you never know. Maybe you get an Elon Musk and Tesla out there or something.
I mean, they just shot 60 satellites up into orbit.
So to talk about that. So I was out at a stargazing out in the desert at Anzabrego, and we were out with like a ranger led stargazing event with the kids, and we're all looking up with probably 40 other people standing there, and then all of a sudden we just see this green line that just looked like, you know, stars in a line, like ants across the sky, all just traveling with each other. None of us knew that these satellites were being launched, so we're like, all of a sudden, everybody's just screaming like UFOs. We're all out in the middle of the desert. We've got a line of UFOs.
Everyone ran to their RV, got their tinfoil hat.
It was amazing to see, like the ranger and everybody was like, "I've never seen that." Like this is someone who knows. She's got the sky memorized, right? And she's just like, "Has anybody ever seen this? Does anybody know what this is?" And nobody's got cell phone reception to look up what is happening to know. It took days of me having it queued up to look up later, like, okay, what happened on Saturday night? And I found out that there were 60 satellites launched, which makes sense, as it was all perfectly in a line, all in the same spot across the sky, and you could track it for 5 minutes, all just going across the sky, perfect. These stars moving in a green line across the sky. It was really cool to see. Now that I got to talk about that tangent, I guess this, we'll wrap up this this episode of the Nerd Cantina Show. Again, want to thank everybody for continuing to listen to us all the way here to episode 11, as we're now firmly into the double digits, and we're excited for what we're doing, what we're bringing to the community. We want these conversations always continuing. So join us in the Facebook group over at thenerdcantina.com/community. Join us there. Send us some suggestions. Send us what you're interested in. We'll drive and steer some of those conversations here in the show.
Yeah, if we miss a news topic that you guys thought you wanted to hear some in-depth conversation on, drop us a line. We're going to be rolling out a Patreon tier where you get to suggest movies to review, suggest TV shows, suggest articles that you guys want written. We want our audience to be involved with what we're doing. I apologize for my 8-month-old. She's joining us on this recording today. Yeah, we want our audience to be involved in this. We pick the topics that we feel are most relevant and that people are going to care about. But if we miss something, if there's something obscure that you'd like to hear some banter on and have us do some research on, please let us know.
All right. And then the last ask that we have is that you just make sure that if you're enjoying what we're doing, please subscribe in whatever podcast player you have. Leave us a rating review on iTunes if you have a minute to spare. Come back for episode 12, as episode 12 will be coming out here in a couple of days, where episode 12, as we continue to separate the interviews from our weekly news. And we've got episode 12 with Steve, with a conversation with our friend over at Cheers of Comics, Brian Wayne, as they talk about kind of the intro level, how does somebody new or who's fallen out of kind of the comic game, how do they get back into it? Where should they spend their first few dollars on which comic series to get back into the world?
Yeah, it was just a nice little nerd conversation on our favorite comics and giving some suggestions to those that love these movies but don't know anything about the source material, and hopefully give some inspiration for some people to go out and pick up a few issues and support the people that write and illustrate these what all these movies are based on. You know, people are spending billions of dollars to go see these movies, and comic book artists and writers are still broke. So it's kind of a shitty system right now. So we want to try to support our local comic book stores and support our local artists and writers in this medium. So we're hoping we wrote this article and did the podcast interview as a way to maybe get people motivated to walk into a comic book store and explore.
All right. Well, that said, thanks for listening. Goodbye, nerds.
See ya.